Welcome to the Mastering Mindfulness Institute, a place to stop diet sabotage and create a life of balance. I'm your host, Gina Werfel, registered dietitian and master of human nutrition. Let's dive in.
Hey guys, welcome back. Today we're going to get re-inspired with the magic of our food. Here in Costa Rica, it's been really cool to go to different farms, meet these farmers, and eat more real natural foods, more plants. And the more that I get connected to the magic of food and learning about these plants, the more inspired I get to eat healthier, eat more plants, and I just want to nourish my body more. And what's so cool is here in Costa Rica, I met this incredible human being. His name is Stephen Brooks, and he's an ethnobotanist, which is the study of the relationship between humans and plants. And he's actually a legend here in Costa Rica. When I met him, I was so inspired by his passion that he has for food and the way that these plants grow and these things that we don't even know about them. And there's so much that we can learn, so much that we can be inspired by. And what an honor it is when we start learning about these plants and taking care of ourselves more, taking care of the earth more. And so we had this really beautiful conversation on how we can go deeper with the relationship with our food and really knowing what is that relationship that we want, creating that vision and that picture. And what do we want for our lives? What do we want for our community? What do we want with the relationship with our earth? And expanding what we even might know as being possible. So Stephen is such an incredible inspiration. He has founded these eco-villages here in Costa Rica, which are communities where people come together and they have community gardens. They have these paths of fruit trees, and they're just creating this community of people who are doing these practices that take care of the earth. They take care of themselves. And it's really, really incredible what he's doing. He has these eco-villages all around Costa Rica. He's also the creator of Envision Festival, which Envision is like, it's different, but it's kind of like known as the Burning Man of Costa Rica out here. It's this incredible, inspirational festival that happens out here that changes the way that people think and the way that they live their lives. And so maybe we can't all come to Costa Rica and live the way that we do here, but if maybe you could take some of the inspiration that in the education that Stephen shares to have more awareness in your life and how we can nourish our bodies better, how we can give back to the earth a little bit better. So I hope you're inspired by today's incredible episode. It was such an honor and a gift to be able to interview Stephen. I hope you enjoy. Thank you so much for your time, for being here. And we're going to jam on food today.
Yeah, jam on food. Yeah. Yeah, I would say Envision isn't one of the biggest festivals. I'd say it's probably the best festival. So yeah. I say that with so much confidence.
Which was inspired by like Burning Man,
totally.
Right? The idea of
totally
fun, connection, human creativity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would say more. It's like, how can we create experiences that are so incredibly delicious that we can't imagine going back to the way things were? Like, how can we create experiences that are like true before and afters? Like, my life was this way before I experienced that, and now it's another way because I experienced.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that was like the goal of it. And pretty much everything that I do is like, how can we really create experiences that shake people? Because it seems like people really need to be shaken.
Yeah. I love that you said that, because when I met, that's actually the feeling that I have from meeting you was, I'm very interested in food and how I relate to the world. But when I met you, it changed my experience. Just the passion that you have for how we live, how we experience the earth, our food. And it actually just completely opened me up to the possibility of a new way of being, a new way of existing.
I think that, you know, we deserve it all, you know, and if you don't set your standards high and feel that you deserve the best, what does the best even mean? Like, you're never going to get what you want if you don't know what you want. You know, it's like, duh, you know, it's like, how are you going to fear, you know, get what you want if you don't even know what it is, you know? So I think taking the time, whether it's a plant medicine, or whether it's like a vision quest, or whether it's just like a solo, you know,
get really quiet with really, what you want.
Yeah, get clear and write it down and create the criteria of like what it is you're seeking. Like when we started, the first big eco village, like I had a very clear criteria on what I was seeking for the land.
Can you share that? Or what it is that your vision was to create? Because I think a lot of people have never even heard of an eco village before. Mm-hmm. And it's such a cool thing that is happening here in Costa Rica. Can you share like what that vision is? And
Maybe I'll rewind a little bit. I grew up in North Miami, Florida, like in this full-blown suburbs.
Mm.
I came down to Costa Rica on vacation when I was 21 years old. And while I was here, I witnessed a playground full of indigenous children get sprayed by a Chiquita banana crop duster with neurotoxic chemicals, you know? And these are indigenous children. These are indigenous people that have literally treated the earth like an extension of their bodies for centuries. Mm. And here we are spraying them with the chemicals that we know cause cancer. Why? Mostly it's a fungicide so that the bananas don't get these weird little marks on it that don't even affect the bananas. Wow. Just makes them harder to sell in the market because they have these little mark, that little brown mark where the two bananas touch.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's totally sick, you know? And after witnessing that, it was like, emergency brake on my life. What the hell are we doing? Is this really the best we can do, humanity? Is this really the best we could design things, like treating these people like this, treating this incredible ecosystem like this? Is this really the best we could do? Like, no, this is not the best we could do. We could be way more fair. We could be way more loving and caring to the earth. Like we could be so much more loving and caring to ourselves. You know, I have this really interesting memory. One time I was at Envision and I gave this talk, probably saying a lot of the things that I'm saying right now. And, you know, after you finish a talk, it was a huge crowd. There's probably, I don't know, 800,000 people there. And I come out of the stage, like out of the side door, and there's all these people waiting to meet me and talk to me and ask me questions and get my email. And so I'm answering people and I'm talking to people and I'm taking pictures of the people. And all of a sudden I just see this guy like looking like he's about to well up in tears crying. And he's just kind of waiting. And I see him out of the corner of my eye and I'm still kind of half talking to people, but I keep looking at him. And then I stop everything and I walk over like, hey, bro, in Espanol, porque he was Colombiano. We start talking in Spanish. I'm like, what's up, bro? What's going on for you? And he just like broke down crying. He's like, wow, your talk really, really moved me. And I was like, oh, really? Why? He's like, well, you know, my family own like 200,000 acres in Colombia, you know, mostly in banana, African palm and cattle, but mostly in banana. My grandfather cleared thousands and thousands of acres of forest. And, you know, now we have tens of thousands of employees. And what I realized as I was listening to you and you talking about the banana plantations is like, those, you know, 20 or 30,000 employees that we have are miserable. Like we've created a life that sucks for them, you know? And you know what? My parents are miserable and so are my grandparents. And as I sit here listening to you, I realize so am I. Everyone's losing in this game. Everyone's losing in this design. Yeah, it's like, yeah, you know, it's like, sure, my family couldn't spend the money that we've accumulated in five lifetimes. But there isn't a therapist out there that we could bring in that could help heal us because we're so broken, you know? So it's like, you know, that really shook me. And it was like, yeah, you know, and I think what was interesting, it was like, here was a guy who the grandson of this family that just happened to have come to Envision and waking up and realizing, wow, you know, this is incredible how fun and beautiful and magical what you guys created here for. Like, I think about all the land that my family has and it's so beautiful. And, but yet it's like, we've designed something that isn't working for anyone.
Mm. And we're so far removed from it being like in the United States. Mm-hmm. It's like, you just go to the grocery store and you pick up your bananas and you don't think twice about what happened, all of the steps to get there and what's happening everywhere else in the world.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you were to put a little title under my name, which I don't know how you post your podcast, but if you're going to put any title by me, I would usually put the word ethnobotanist.
Yeah.
I do a lot of different things. Like sometimes I get referred to as a developer and I'm always like, whoa, you know, but I would say first and foremost, I'm an ethnobotanist, and ethnobotany is the study of the relationship between humans and plants. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say that again. It's the study of the relationship between humans and plants. And that relationship is incredibly profound. And we've totally lost sight. And I feel like people are starting to realize and starting to reconnect, but like plants are this incredible language, this incredible song. And we go into places that have lots of different variety of plants. And like, literally it's like a symphony of beautiful plant song. And when we start to remember that and we start to relearn that,
it changes everything.
It changes everything. And it's also like, even with our own health, like plants are like the epitome of unconditional love. Like we've gone in and we've just destroyed their ecosystems and we've destroyed their habitats, yet they just keep coming back, wanting to heal us, wanting to feed us, wanting to clothe us, wanting to help us smell good, wanting to dye our clothes and our skin, and they just want to love us, you know, and it's unconditional. It doesn't matter what we've done.
I learned that here in Costa Rica. That's really been sinking in with me, is a deeper, deeper level of understanding what is unconditional love, and observing nature and this planet and how the water just keeps coming and the plants just keep on growing. And no matter what we need, it keeps showing up and it has our back. And I thought it's really dropped me into a really deeper connection with my food. From the first time that we met and we sat down for dinner. And when I was younger, I remember hearing other people say grace and, oh, thank you, God. And this is 100% not to mock anyone who says grace. I think it's really beautiful. But when I was younger, I didn't understand anything about God. I was so far removed from anything around food. And I felt like I was going through the motions. I'm like, why are we doing this? And then when I met you, we sat at the dinner table and we all had held hands. And I remember looking down at my food and just being in complete awe when we just took the time to be intentional, to just connect with the gratitude for what this food, how it continues to just grow and grow and grow. And then how it creates all these nutrients to interact with all the cells in my body. And it gives me life. Like it is giving me life. And when we just looked down at our food and just had this moment of gratitude, it opened up a deeper relationship. Mm. Like you said, the relationship with the plants, I had this deeper level of respect for the plant. And it actually, I think it's been changing the way that I'm even being more intentional every time I eat, to just slow down, view the beautiful colors, the flavors, how it's nourishing my body. Like you said, when you study that relationship with plants, it can change everything. Mm. Deeper unconditional love, deeper gratitude, deeper connection with our bodies. And then I think we're naturally less likely to just overconsume processed foods and mindlessly eat these processed foods when we have such respect and reverence for what these natural foods are doing for us unconditionally.
Mm. You know, and I also think that moment to hold hands around your meal is so it's really great to just have the gratitude for the food and the plants, but it's also just, how can we shift reality for a moment into sacred? You know, how can we remind ourselves, and not only ourselves, but to collectively whoever we're with, like I do it every day at lunch and dinner, no matter who I'm with. And sometimes I'm with like really random people who have never held hands with anyone that wasn't their wife or their kids, you know? And it was like, this really strange reality. Whoa, we're holding hands. This is so weird. And I actually love doing that. I love that kind of just surprise, you know? And I think bringing sacred as my sister is Jewish. We're Jewish, but she's like more religious. She keeps Shabbat every week. And so what that means is every Friday night, her whole family turn off their phones. They don't go in cars. They don't even touch their light switches. They don't cook. They just be. And that radical transition from like the busy movement, doing, thinking, working, to all of a sudden transition to just being for 25 hours.
Mm, wow.
You know, it's, and it's like, they're religious about it. Like, and it's not, you know, they're not like overly orthodox where it's like they're, but they do that to just that deep remembrance of sacred. This day is sacred, you know, and you could do that once a week like they do, or you can do it twice a day with whoever you're with before your meal, just to like shift to sacredness, close your eyes, like feel this moment. You know, I love the word savor, you know, like really say in Spanish, it's saborear, which means like sabor means flavor. Saborear is the verb, like to take in the flavor, you know? So it's like, how can we truly savor what's happening right now? This time, these friends, this food, this life and this world that we're so blessed with. And like, let's just remember it. Let's keep remembering. Let's remember the creation, how miraculous it is. Like, wow. Like, don't underestimate the miracle that's happening right now, that like your great, 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 great parents made love the day they did. And only because that happened, you're here. Yeah. And my great, great, great parents made love the day they did. You know, and down the line, there's like a million miracles, you know, and not to mention that like there's probably like 10 or 20,000 sperm racing to the egg. And like the one that made it is you, you know, it's like you are one in 20 million the freaking second you were born. You know, wow, what a miracle. Don't lose sight of that. And all of us around this table, all eight of us that were holding hands, and it's like, wow.
And all the food made it there. The food was able to grow.
Well, and just think about the food. We take it for granted. But like these foods have come from all over the world. And like the plant explorers throughout history have like trialed and erred and have selected the best varieties for their flavor. And their, I mean, it's like there's a million miracles that have just happened so we can have this meal. So like, let's take a moment to like bask in it.
Yeah. And then on top of that, I'm blown away just because I'm a science brain that I'm like, wow, in order for my body to live, this plant is going to give me these compounds that create life. Like there are compounds in colorful foods that will activate our genes, our longevity genes, to start healing and repair and growth and produce energy and life. And it's like, wow, that I can receive from this life force to create my own life force. And it's going to work with all of my cells and all the vitamins that work with my brain and my body and my liver and my gut. Like it's incredible that everything that my body is needing can come from what's in front of me.
Totally. Yeah, I know. It's totally. And you know, what's so cool, but what you just said that got me thinking is like, there's so many compounds in that food that the scientists haven't even been able to label, you know? So it's like, there's fats and there's carbs and there's protein and there's all the things that like scientists are able to, you know, but there's frequency and magic, you know? And it's like, it's beyond word. It's like beyond science. It's beyond all things, you know? It's like, you know, if you have a vegetable soup from Campbell's, you know, there's carrots and there's onions and there's celery and there's all these foods that they put in there and they list it in the ingredients and they have the nutritional facts to back it up, you know? But like when grandma makes the same soup with the same ingredients from her garden, you know, it's like, whoa, I don't even know what's happening right now, but
living food,
something, you know, it's like when people used to come to Punta Mona and eat, the food was so incredible. Like everything was pretty much 80% of what, or 75% of what we ate, you know, came from 200 meters from the kitchen.
Whoa.
You know, and there's like, there's deep magic there that like people don't even understand.
Yeah.
You know, it's beyond our even comprehension to like understand what's happening.
Yeah. What's so cool is you actually live in that magic. We had a friend who was with you right by where you live. And he said, it's true. You can walk through these paths of all this fruit and things that are just growing and you can just grab it and it's right there and it's all possible. So you actually live your life that way. And what's really fun is you have this really playful, like curiosity with getting to know like different fruits and herbs and plants. And you actually have an herbalism course where you teach people how to know like the spirit of these plants different. How did you start to learn or what can we start to learn about like interacting with these plants and getting to know them deeper and like developing that relationship, like you said?
Yeah, you know, it's so incredible. I've been at this like for almost 30 years, like 30 years of collecting plants. Our farm here in Costa Rica is one of the largest collections of useful plants in the world. And you know, and as long as I've been at it, like I still have these like plant crush people. That's got like, there's a guy in Hawaii right now that like I'm totally like the minute I wake up, I check his Instagram stories because I can't wait to see what's happening with him today. And this other guy down here, Daniel Anderson, and like I can't wait to see an Instagram story come up, because I know it's like, you know, so there's people like I was like this pioneer, and you know what's so exciting right now that you're not going to believe, it's like a lot of this magic and this like one of the big miracles that's happening right now, and this is going to sound so weird, you're not even going to believe what I'm about to say, is Facebook. So there's all these like really, I'm in all these like really nerdy Facebook groups, like around certain plant families.
Okay.
And there's people in Sri Lanka, and there's people in Brazil, and there's people in Florida, and there's people in Hawaii, and there's people in Thailand, and there's people in Cameroon that are all talking about the same plants for the first time in the history of humanity.
Just talking about, oh, right, connecting yeah. over these different fruits.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's so many new things coming out that we've never even heard of for the first time ever.
Like what kind of things?
I mean, there's like, you know, one that, you know, we're starting to grow, but I've actually never eaten it because it's just fruiting for the first time. It's called Okari nut. It's from Papua New Guinea.
How do we get a new fruit that's never...
Oh, there's tons. You wouldn't even believe it.
They've never been discovered, or they've been discovered,
but they don't have a long shelf. A lot of things don't have a long shelf life.
Oh.
You know, I'll give you another example. There's a nut called pili nut from the Philippines. Pili nut is the most delicious nut in the world. Like, it tastes like you're biting into like a little piece of butter.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And in the 50s, you know, the Mauna Loa, the big company that kind of, you were eating macadamia nuts. Uh-huh. Mauna Loa is a big company in Hawaii that basically planted big orchards of macadamia and popularized them. Macadamia was from Australia. They brought it to Hawaii. They planted big orchards.
Oh.
And then all of a sudden, macadamia nuts were in the market. Or something else is like kiwi. You know, kiwi, 30 years ago, nobody heard of it. It's, you know, it's this... subtropical vine from, you know, southern China, or a temperate vine from southern China, you know, that was unknown outside of that area. And then all of a sudden, you know, what they realized is, and you might not know this, is that kiwi has one of the longest shelf life. Like, you cut a kiwi and you could store it for 3 months and it's still as good as it was when you picked it, or better.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's a lot of the foods that we know, we only know them because they have a long shelf life. So it's very, very interesting. And it's a very interesting time, you know. And then, so I was going to say about the macadamia nuts. So Mauna Loa was trying to decide, they knew they wanted to put more nuts out there. And so they were deciding between the macadamia nut and the pili nut. And they ended up choosing the macadamia nut because it's rounder, it's like whiter. Yeah. And, it, you know, where the pili nut is kind of like a football shape, but it's amazing. I actually like it more than macadamia, but it's still unknown. It's still like, it's a jungle nut from the Philippines. And it's actually really, really regenerative to eat it, because they don't even have to farm it, because they collect it in the wild. There's like, there's, you know, 250-year-old, 300-year-old trees that are loaded with,
wow.
Yeah. So it's amazing. It's amazing the amount of, you know, I have this book called Nuts of the World. You know, it's this out of print book, you know, by this guy named Menninger. And you go through the book and there's so many incredible nuts. And this is this is something I want to touch on, is like, we think about all of our different diets, you know, like in the 70s, what was like, people became like macrobiotic. That
right.
was the thing. Or like in the 80s, people became vegetarian. Mm-hmm. Or in the 90s, they became vegan. And then in the 2000s, they became raw. And then those same people, like in 2010, you know, started becoming keto or whatever. And they started just drinking, those same raw vegans were like drinking beef bone broth all day.
Right.
You know, and I think what a lot of those diets had in common is that I think people were just like so obsessed with their own health.
Right.
You know, and like obsessed with their health, you know, and it's like, how can we find a diet that not only takes care of our own health, but also takes care of the planet's health? And something that I've been talking about for a long time is like, how can we start shifting more towards a perennial diet, a diet that's more focused on perennials? And for those that don't know what that even means, we have two kinds of foods out there. And plants. We have annuals and perennials. So annuals are plants that you plant the seed, they grow, they flower, they fruit, and then they die all in one season.
Okay.
So most of our foods are that, whether it's tomatoes or cucumbers or wheat or rice or corn or watermelon, or, you know, these are all foods that come from annuals. Now, foods that come from perennials are things like hazelnuts or almonds or cashews or cacao or, you know, avocados or jackfruit or breadfruit. And these are all, you know, there's some of them are fruits, but some of them are vegetables.
Okay.
There's this incredible book that this guy, Eric Townsmeyer, wrote that I love. It's called Perennial Vegetables. I'm super excited about perennial vegetables. I love vegetables that grow on trees. And that's,
so the perennial would be dependent on where you live as well, right? Totally. If you're trying to buy local. Totally. Right. Okay. It wouldn't be the same across the board.
It's easier in the tropics to do this.
Got it.
Easier. Okay. There's more perennial vegetables in the tropics, but there's also in the temperate areas. And so how, and you know, one thing that I always had a little problem with, like raw foodists always kind of annoyed me because they would come to our farm and they would eat all the bananas and they just like so hungry all the time. One thing I really liked about the raw food movement is they used to have like these conversations like 80-20 or 70, do you know about that? Like 80 raw, 20 cooked, 70 raw, 30 cooked. And it was like kind of like it was just kind of like a way to like kind of guide your diet. And I appreciate that. And I think that's something we can do with perennials. You know, it's like, how can we start incorporating more perennial foods into our diet? Now, why is this so important? Because when you grow annuals, you plant the whatever is you're planting, whether it's a field of corn. And then when you harvest that field of corn, that corn just sapped all those nutrients that corn needs from the soil. So you can't just keep growing corn because eventually, and the same foods, even if you can grow them, they're just less nutrient dense. So maybe you'll switch off and then you'll grow beans or soybean, you know, it's like, but every time you finish, you have to come back in and they bring in big machines, you know, like tractors that come in and turn the soil, and all the carbon that's been saved up in the soil just gets released into the atmosphere, you know? So it's like, it's amazing, incredible how important for the planet, like even more important than bringing your cloth bag to the grocery store. It's like,
why don't we know more about this? Why is this not, if it's so important, why is it?
Yeah.
And we're like, I'm originally from Michigan. We have a lot of listeners who are in Utah, who are all over the country. Is it easy to start doing that, to start eating more perennial foods and getting closer to the source? I mean, being in some of these areas where some people are in cities, some people are, you know, and we're not, unfortunately, a lot of people are not here in Costa Rica.
Yeah, I don't think.
We start doing this?
I think, you know, I'm just like, I'm going to date myself. I'm going to date myself right now. It was actually after my time, but I just remember the commercials for it. There was this cartoon called G.I. Joe. And G.I. Joe, they would do these commercials where they would like, G.I. Joe would give like a lesson. And at the end, he would say, oh, and now you know. And knowing's half the battle, you know? So it's like just knowing something, all of a sudden you could start shifting, like becoming aware and mindful. Like, for example, garbage, like at the end of the week, take all your garbage and dump it out and look at it. What kind of garbage are you making? How can you make choices and meet those same needs and not make garbage, you know, or your diet? Like every day for a week, write down what you're eating. Is there possible things that you can replace that would be perennial or would be more local or would be organic or would have less packaging? It's up to you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really up to you. And you can start shifting towards eating more perennial foods. You know, it's just like, and I think what's so important is not becoming too dogmatic about anything. It's like, oh, but now I'm only going to eat perennial, you know? It's like, you know, it's just a transition. We need to transition from the way things were to the way things can be. And I want to take a moment and even just talk about permaculture. So permaculture is an ecological design philosophy that was coined by a guy named Bill Mollison and his student David Holmgren in the 70s in Tasmania, Australia. And he was a biologist and like a forester, Bill Mollison. And he was just like living in Tasmania where at a time, like in the 60s, where like if you needed milk, you put your empty bottle outside and the you know, farmer down the street came and refilled your bottle and left it there for you. Or if, you know, there wasn't so much garbage, there wasn't so much imported things. Like there wasn't big giant, like township septic systems. Like people had their own little septic in their yard and people didn't make a lot of garbage because it wasn't part of that system. You know, people grew food and people made products and there was like a local economy. And then all of a sudden in the 70s, like all of a sudden there was like, you know, two white men shaking hands and then some big garbage liner dump gets put in on, you know, in the town. And then there's like, you know, huge water treatment system that goes in where, you know, and all of a sudden things started shifting. And then they started importing stuff from Melbourne and from Sydney and from Europe. And the grocery store just changed. Mm. And it was all these packaged preserved things with big shelf lives with, you know, and it was like, wait a minute. Bill Mollison was looking around like, this is not going to work long term? Mm-hmm. Like, who are we, who's designing this? You know, who's designing this reality? And I know we could do a lot better, you know? So they wrote this book called Permaculture One. And, you know, the kind of, you know, it's like, how can we design ecological systems for humans and all things to thrive? I mean, like on a macro, that's kind of the way they defined it. The way I define permaculture is, how can we meet our goals and use less energy? Duh. You know, and it's like, if I was to say, you know, Gina, do we have the same goals? At first you'd be like, I don't, but we do. Like, we want to play more than we work. We want to feel love. We want to eat well. We want clean water. We don't want war and turmoil outside our home. We want to feel safe. You know, we want, you know, we want to eat great things. You know, it's like, it's pretty, on a macro level, we have the same goals. So now how can we meet those goals collectively and be more mindful and use less energy? So when I say energy, what am I even talking about? Like, if I was to run down to the main road and back to come back here, I'd be out of physical energy. So we want to be mindful of our physical energy. If I had to like do my taxes, which I wouldn't even know where to start, or I had to like, you know, answer 20 emails at the end of the day, I'd be like tired mentally. We have mental energy. So we have physical energy. We have mental energy. And then we have our financial energy. Like, how much money do I have? Can I afford to do this? So subconsciously, we're constantly moving through life, navigating these energies, like physical, mental, financial. Now, what permaculture brings into the mix is like, how much of the planet's energy am I using? How many non-renewable resources? Like, that's really important. Non-renewable, like, it's really a serious thing. Like, how many things am I using that are non-renewable, like that are just going to, you know, just going to throw away, you know? And it's like, and I think that's one of the most amazing things about nature. In nature, there's no waste.
Mm. You know? I don't even think I was really thinking about that before we started having these conversations. I mean, a little bit, but as far as I know, it's like the trash goes in the trash can and then it disappears. I don't know where it disappears to, but somebody takes care of it. And do I really need to limit my trash? Not really, because I don't know where it's disappeared. It's gone. It's taken care of.
Yeah.
So I think from what you're saying, from what I'm taking, and you can expand on this if you feel that it'd be helpful, but what I'm taking is just to pause and actually be mindful of like, what is the trash that I'm accumulating? What am I taking from this earth without giving back? And I love the idea of it. Now it's the education of like, okay, what does that actually look like? Because like I said, to me, in my mind, I was like, oh, I'm doing good things for the planet. I'm getting rid of my plastic. Now I'm doing recycled paper. And then you brought to my awareness, but wait, you're still creating more trash. This isn't, this isn't the earth.
The cup might be paper, but that weird little plastic cup they put on top of it. And then you just throw it away. And it's coming from a factory and it's being shipped across the world. And they're using petroleum to move it. It's like, And it's like, if you didn't buy that plastic cup, is it going to make a macro difference? Maybe not. You know, it's not that one thing, but like we all, the only thing that makes change is you, you know? And it's like, if you start shifting towards doing things, you know, better, which means never, like, unless you're in an emergency. And I got to be honest with you, like, I've like fainted and gotten sick because I'm like so radical. I don't want to buy a bottle of water, you know, but which is also another shame. Buy water if you're really thirsty in a bottle. And it's okay. You know, but we can't do that anymore.
Just buying like, bottled waters daily.
Even our dear friend that I'm here staying with right now, who drinks 5 kombucha cans a day. You know, you can't do that anymore. Like, oh yeah, but I'm recycling. And actually, aluminum cans is a better, but it's still so much energy. We can't do that anymore. We can't be buying. You know, I remember when it hit me, I was in the natural food business and I used to go to Whole Foods. I was like in a different Whole Foods every day around the country. And every day I'd eat at the salad bar and I'd get my GT's kombucha and I would drink it and then I'd put it in the recycling and that felt okay. And then one day it hit me. I was like, wait a minute. I can't do this anymore. Like, this is not okay. Like, if I can't do better, then who can? Like, I'm this like eco guy and I'm still doing that, living in that.
What could it look like? Let's say, okay, let's just say you're in the States, you're in a city, you have 4 kids. They're going to school. You got to pack lunches. You got to do the things. And you're about to make those moments of decision where you're like, okay, I'm about to give my kid packaged food, plastic fork to go to school, all these things. Like, how can we actually be able to take action without moving to like a farm in Costa Rica?
So my very dear friend, Stephanie Bernstein, many, many years ago, she sold it later on, started a company called To-Go-Ware. Mm-hmm. They had these little bamboo cutlery kits. Mm-hmm. And then they had these like tiffins, you know, those things from India. They're like
Stackable, they collapse.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, she started that company and it was like so radical. Like, of course.
Solve the problem.
You know, my friend Human, he never goes anywhere without a little his bag, which has his to-go-ware, his wood bowl.
Wow.
Everywhere he goes, he always has that. Like, we just need to be more mindful. And mm-hmm. and like we need to get strict with ourselves. Like, we can't do that anymore. Like, if we got to radically do better. So that's one thing we could do. We could send our kids not with a plastic fork, not in a disposable bag, or we could really do it so that doesn't make garbage. And then, like, what's the food that we're putting in there? Join a CSA. If you don't have time to grow food, if you don't have time to have a garden, which you do, you could have a garden. There's, if you don't have space in your own house, there's like rooftops or there's community gardens that you can get involved in. I would recommend that. But if you can't even do that, go to your farmer's market. Look your farmer in the eye. Take your kids, your four kids, to go visit that farm on Sunday and see where your food is coming from and give them a hug mm. and appreciate them and go once a month to like volunteer at the farm there, at the mm. farm where you're getting your stuff from.
It's beautiful.
You know, CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture, and you can often you pay like a fee, and it's actually cheaper than buying food at the grocery store.
Yeah, we were doing it in San Diego. We were getting a CSA box of vegetables and just loved it.
And there's 100 great things about it. For one, you're keeping the money in the community. You're not, you know, most of the money when you buy food at the grocery store isn't even going to the farmer. Like, it's a small little smidge of the pie. It's like going to the brand, and it's going to the broker, and it's going to the people that are shipping it, and it's going to the packaging, and it's going to the pallet that the packaging sat on. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. it's like when you buy from a CSA, your money's going right to the farmer, which is revolutionary. And then the other thing is it's organic. A lot of, you know, it's most of those farms are organic. So you're not supporting chemical companies. You're supporting life.
Right.
You know, the other thing is you're not supporting shipping. You know, there's no big shipping going on. There's not like a refrigerated container burning diesel driving across the country. So many win-wins, you know, and then as important as anything is your health. Like, you're eating healthier. You're eating in season. You're eating, you know, food that's growing on living soil, that's carrying nutrients and carrying that magic that we were talking about before, that frequency that's going to make you feel better.
Yeah. Especially if you think about that, when we get so, so disconnected from our food, I now look at from how I'm living in Costa Rica, being so intimate with my food, going to the farmer's market, developing such a deeper relationship with my food and appreciation for it. And now thinking back to how far I was disconnected from, like, you just buy my vegetables in the sealed bags, and like, who knows how long it's been there for, and just being so far removed to all the places that plant had gone and went. And it's just easy to start to become numb to it. But all it takes is like,
that's the key word,
one experience to go to a farmer's market, go deeper, and really, just like you said, see the hands that went into growing it and how much more alive it is. Just such a deeper appreciation for it.
Yeah, totally.
I just wanted to also just touch on something that I was looking at your herbalism course, which I think is so beautiful because there's so much inspiration around getting to know the magic of food. And you had something on there that says there's a healer in every household, which is really beautiful.
Yeah, we need that. I mean, we need that. Like, in this day and age where like our kid gets a sniffle and we just run to the urgent care. It was so funny. I've been saying that a lot as I've been talking about the herbal certification. And the other day I'd hit my elbow the other day. I was laying in a hammock that broke and I smacked my elbow. And my mom's like, you really should go to urgent care. Like, it's just so like, it's so like the reaction when there's something, oh, go to urgent care. They have the answer. When really the answer is probably some weed that your husband or your son is like, or your daughter is mowing in your yard, that like the answers are right there in our yards and we're just mowing them.
Yeah.
Cutting them down. You know, it's like, so yeah, we need to find healers in our communities. We need to find, and we need to maybe become that. We need to become more aware that healing ourselves isn't this like, you know, witch kind of thing. It's like there's real, you know, medicines growing around us that could radically improve our health. And, you know, so we're doing, this is all through Ecoversity, which is a project that I started a couple of years ago. And I'd say about 4 or 5 years ago, I was teaching a permaculture course. And there was this woman in the course that by the end of it, she was just like, Stephen, you can't be teaching this to 30 people at a time anymore. The whole world needs this, you know? And I was like, yeah, I totally agree. She's like, well, have you ever thought about teaching online? And I was like, kind of like, I don't know, online. And so we launched, and ironically, we launched right as COVID came on. And I was also on this television show on Netflix called Down to Earth with Zac Efron. And it came out on July 10th, 2020. So it was like the number one show for 11 days globally on Netflix.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy. And our permaculture course blew up. Like next thing we know, we had like 300 people from 30 something countries in our course on Zoom.
So it's becoming cool now.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely cooler than it ever was. You know, being a farmer was like so dorky. And, you know, now there's like, I was in Whole Foods the other day and there was like some urban farmer magazine, like the kids from Brooklyn and Oakland and Austin are talking about raising chickens and having farms.
Yeah. What can you explain a little bit deeper? Like, what is herbalism? Like, what are the things that we can learn from these herbs and these plants?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, just from like the macro is just like identifying like 20 or 30, you know, plants that heal us. And a lot of those plants are sitting right in our spice cabinet.
You know, it was so cool. Just 2 days ago, I was on a little adventure with Raj in Costa Rica, and he picked up this pamphlet at the place we were staying that had all these different herbs and plants, and it said the healing properties. And he goes, you know, I'd love to believe this, but I just don't know if this is true. And I'm like, oh, let me take a look. And I started recognizing some of them that I know of them because they're put in supplements. And because we're not educated on this, a lot of people don't realize that our medications come from supplements, or they found these herbs and these herbal things in nature, and then they figure out what the compounds are, and then they turn them into medications that they can sell and make profits from. But for some reason, our brains were trained that medication equals effective. Natural herb means not effective. One of my clients, she was having a hard time staying accountable to like taking her supplements. And we're like, let's unpack that. Like, why are you having a hard time taking your supplements? Is it remembering? And she's like, no, I remember. I just choose not to. And I said, what about your medication? Do you ever miss your medication? And she said, never, never a single day. I said, do you think maybe there's a belief there that the medication is impactful and the natural herb maybe isn't? She's like, wow, you're right. I think I don't have as deep conviction that this herbal thing is effective. And then I had to show her, you know, things like like berberine comes from a plant and is found to be just as effective, if not more effective, than the drug metformin at improving blood sugar and diabetes. Mm. And so, unfortunately, our society isn't taught these things, that these herbs could heal. And whether it's some of my clients or Raj or other people, or even myself, we forget the power that these plants actually have if we just learn about them and use them.
So a lot of times people just get stuck in the paralysis by analysis, or like, well, I'm not quite ready. Like, I don't really know enough yet.
This feels like a big thing.
Yeah, but it's not. And all of a sudden when you're surrounded by people that are also,
yeah,
you know, in this process of connecting with plants and waking up to their power and to trusting, you know, it's a lot easier to trust when you're surrounded by people that are also in that process of learning to trust.
Mm. What a beautiful thing to start teaching to our kids. It can feel intimidating if you have families and you have kids and you have lives, but what a beautiful thing to focus on with your kids and your families of learning together, learning, getting more intimate with our food, taking those little steps. Like, how empowering to your children to teach them, hey, what if instead we made it this thing together and that's how we bonded and it didn't have to be an extra burden on the parent, but like, what if we used our hands and we picked things out of the farmer's market and we sat and we had gratitude with our food and we touched our food and we admired its beauty and what it's going to do for our bodies. What could that do for children as they grow up and develop a relationship to food instead of, you know, the way that we get so used to being in a rhythm and just eating in front of the TV and just checking out and rushing and convenience, convenience, convenience. It's like our world is just faster, 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 quicker, quicker, cheaper, cheaper, everything just, and to slow down and have gratitude and appreciation and connection. What a gift we could give to children. And by the way, you really live what you preach. It was beautiful. I came in and we're sharing this coffee and you're like, homemade coconut milk. And I just think like, wow, why couldn't I do that?
Yeah, you could. Or, you know, it's like, I, you know, when I met Andrea, my partner, like she loves milk. like she eats cereal and she loves it in her coffee. And she was buying like two or three boxes of almond milk a week. So let's break it down. Almonds, they grow in like almost drought areas. So like the almonds in California are like literally sucking the watershed down. Like it's the groundwater is shrinking. Like there's thousands of acres now of almonds because of almond milk. You know, and then, you know, so that's one thing that they're doing. Then they, you know, it's a major factory that's turning them into milk and then putting them into these Tetra Paks, which never, nothing ever happens.
Plastic.
Yeah. I mean, plastic and metals and weird shit that's in Tetra Paks.
Mm-hmm.
And then not to mention here in Costa Rica, it's $6 or $7 for one
at
of
least.
Those. Mm-hmm. Yeah. $7 for one of those boxes, you know, where the coconuts that I buy for 300 colones. That's like 50 cents. I buy a coconut for 50 cents, you know, in the cities, you know, even in any, in the cities around the world. And yeah, they're coming from far away. So it's something to think about, but you could buy a coconut for $2, you know, and so, a coconut makes liters of coconut milk.
So, okay. So what if not a coconut? It does take some effort to hack open a coconut, do the whole thing. If maybe if you're in the States, are the nut, like, can you make your own nut milk? Is that okay? Is that
absolutely? Okay. I mean, I've been making oat. Like, if I don't have coconuts, I'll make, like, in the States, I often make oat milk, which oats are also
a little controversial annual. Right now.
Well, they're annuals. It's another annual. But yeah, I mean, you could be making, you know, cashew milk. It's so easy. You could be making rice milk. You know, you could be making so many different kinds. Milk is such an easy thing to make. So stop buying. So if you're listening to this, stop right now buying Tetra Paks. You know, stop buying, you know, if you're a milk drinker.
Like, it's so easy.
So easy to make oat milk. It's incredibly easy to make oat milk. Like, it's ridiculous. You know, so yeah, I mean, I think everything. So did I say the two words before? I can't remember. I started to think about it.
What two words?
The two words that are coming up for me from everything that we're saying. And it's graceful transition. Graceful transition from the way things were to the way we know they can be, and don't be so hard on ourselves and don't be so judgmental of ourselves, and like, we are gracefully transitioning, you know, and we could start analyzing what's in our garbage. We can start analyzing, listing what we're eating. What foods can I replace them with that would be healthier for me and healthier for the planet and healthier for all the people. You know, and just go through it, and it's okay. Yeah. And it's so much easier when we do it together. Like where I live, like I never go to the grocery store. I order once a week. Mm-hmm. Our whole community orders from one farm that delivers to our community, because we grow a lot of the things, but the things we can't grow get delivered to our homes, you know, and the woman that like delivers it, like I look her in her eyes, she grew most of those things. And if she didn't grow them, she got them from her neighbors. I often think about my friend, this guy, Rolf Ruge. He was this incredible guy. May he rest in peace. He started the Feria Verde in San Jose, which is like one of the best organic markets in all of Central and South America. It's an incredible experience of just celebrating food. And his house was kind of like the epicenter of the ecological movement in Costa Rica. And like, he would have these like feasts for lunch, and everyone that was doing cool projects around Costa Rica would always end up at Rolf's house. And Rolf had this very deep voice, and he would start every meal and he would say, "Aquí en mi mesa no hay ningún ingrediente que no conozco el nombre y la apellido del productor." There is not one ingredient on my table that I don't know the first and last name of the producer. And then he would start to introduce us to our food as if he was introducing us to his family, because in a way he was. He was like, las tortillas. The corn were grown by Mario Vargas, and the tortillas were made by his wife, Esmeralda. Esmeralda. And then the salad, he'd start breaking out. The tomatoes came from Finca La Paz, Maria. And, you know, he would go around there all the way down to the freaking sea salt, you know, that was made by Carlos Mendez, you know, at Punta Arenas. And
whoa.
Yeah. You know, and he would say, that's the kind of, and I just remember having that experience and thinking, wow, I want to eat that way. I want to know the first and last name of the people that are growing my food. And I know that at the end of the day, like, I'm radically improving the world. I'm improving people's lives that I know, you know, rather than it just being this like, you know, broken system where we're buying things from people that only could, like, the only reason they could sell at Target is because they had such inventory and such big insurance and such big capacity to be able to sell to Target.
Yeah. I keep coming back to when we had first met, you held a cacao ceremony, which is kind of becoming a little more known in the States, but to take a cacao bean and turn it into a drink, which is like the raw cacao, which is eventually, you know, our chocolate once upon a time came from that, but then gets turned into the Hershey's bar that we can binge eat at the movies. But to be in Costa Rica where we're sitting in nature with this raw cacao. And I remember we prayed over the cacao, just the gratitude and the connection. And all I could think was, wow, what if we all took a moment to just pause and actually like pray over the food and the gratitude and to really just taste the real food and not fill it with sugar and these additives and these flavorings and all these things, but to actually come back to the purest food and to actually just take a moment of like a prayer or a ritual or a ceremony over the food, how beautiful our lives could change, our health could change. And that's what kind of what you're talking about, like with all that food. So I just really appreciate the reverence for food.
Graceful transition. Mm-hmm. Graceful transition.
And that's what it can be, is like just starting with every meal. Like maybe you're leaving this podcast like, wow, there's so much I could be doing, and maybe even feeling a bit overwhelmed. But I think a gorgeous place to start is just starting with one meal, just starting and sitting, having some reverence, thinking about where it came from, maybe having a little moment of gratitude with your family for even for yourselves, for preparing yourself a meal when it could have been easier to go pick up fast food or something, but just connecting a little bit deeper, a little bit deeper. How can I do better things for the environment? How can I make less waste? And every little decision matters. Mm. Everything matters, right? Yes. Every decision matters. So this has been, just knowing you has been so inspiring to me, and I appreciate your passion. And it's such a reminder that one person can make an extraordinary difference. And that when we say, what does this matter? My one decision, my one being, but you're truly making such a difference in the world, and you're educating people. They have the ability to make the choice to learn, to empower themselves. So if you want to share a little bit about what you do have coming up, you have the herbalism certification. So you actually become certified as an herbalist. Is that what it is?
Yeah. You know, as you know, it's kind of a big game, whatever certain, you know, it's like,
what do you certify?
What is that even for? Right. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the 6 months, you will really understand herbal medicine, you know, and you will.
And you actually empower people to start up their own business in that too, which is cool. Like whether you want to use herbs for making your own skincare, your own lotions, your own, like that is really cool. You're empowering people, especially for, let's say like you're wanting to start something, a hobby or a new business that you can actually use these herbs for healing. That's what I think is really cool, is you also empower people in starting their own businesses as well.
Yeah,
totally. Right?
So that's coming up. And, you know, Eterna is this next kind of iteration of land projects that's going to, you know, really merge, you know, where we live with what we eat, with conservation, with how we gather, how we celebrate. And so that's what we're doing here now
in Costa Rica.
Costa Rica is starting
community living,
new land projects, and to make something that's macro and replicable. Like we could do here, we could do it in Colombia. We're going to Colombia on Thursday to like meet with this group in Colombia about doing it there. And then we're going to Portugal this summer about doing it in Portugal. So I would just invite everybody to just really think about how you're living and how you can improve it, and where do you want to be in a year or in 5 years or in 10 years or in 20 years? And what kind of steps can you start taking now to get to where you want to be?
Mic drop. Thank you so much for sharing your heart and your passion. Appreciate you.
Yeah, I appreciate you. You're welcome.
How can everybody find you, follow your information, all the things that you talk about?
I do a thing called Know Thy Fruits in my Instagram, which is really fun. My Instagram, Stephen with a PH, STEPHENR Brooks. And exciting times, really exciting times. And it's been so great getting to know you just love spreading the message, and please stay in touch.
Okay, guys, I hope you learned a lot and you're inspired to get a little bit closer with your food. the planet, feeling the unconditional love from everything that grows here. And I'll put all the links in the show notes. And we would always love to hear what resonated with you, what landed. And feel free to send me a message anytime. And we'll see you in the next episode.